Is doing right more important than giving God the credit for what you're doing? Welcome to The Good Word. This is Alden Thompson, and we are continuing our series in the book of Proverbs. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Linda Emerson, Assistant Professor of Philosophy. And I would like to pursue that question with just a bit more of a comment, then I'm going to toss it out to you. In preparation for this series of discussions, I went through the entire book and underlined every reference to God.
The entire book of Proverbs.
The entire book of Proverbs.
Okay.
And I discovered that there are several chapters where God isn't mentioned at all. There's some where he comes a little bit more visibly. But that's what's behind my question. Is a person who is constantly saying, God, Lord, is that person automatically more to be respected than a person who doesn't take the name of God on, but whose moral character is absolutely impeccable?
No, I think that's an easy question to answer, Alden. I think from personal experience, and also when I think of parables like the parable of the sheep and the goats, that what you do is of more substance than what you say. And certainly that's true in life. We know people who glad hand and tell all kinds of things, but there's nothing behind it. And so I would say it's more important to do right than to always have the name of God on your lips. And, you know, there are people who use the name of God frivolously that way.
Right.
You're agreeing with me, Linda?
I am actually in complete agreement with you. I mean, I'm not sure that it isn't one or the other. But the praising of God wears thin when the actions of praise don't follow or aren't part of the experience.
There are temperament differences, which I think come in there as well. Now, I have one fun example in the historical accounts of the Old Testament, place where Jehoshaphat and Ahab were going out to battle. And if you read the book of Kings, this is what happens. The enemies were wanting to get Ahab. They weren't after Jehoshaphat. They wanted to get only Ahab. So the biblical account in 1 Kings 11 says, "So they turned to fight against him, and Jehoshaphat cried out. When the captains of the chariot saw that it was not the king of Israel, they turned back from pursuing him." Now, just a simple, straightforward account of what had happened there. But now when you go to the same account in Chronicles, notice what's happened. "So they turned to fight against him, and Jehoshaphat cried out, and the Lord helped him. God drew them away from him. For when the captains of the chariot saw that it was not the king of Israel, they turned back from pursuing him." So here you have Chronicles. He's more of a hallelujah kind of guy.
Right.
And he will add that in there. Mm-hmm. But my question is the author of Chronicles a more privileged believer because of his godly addition?
I would say no.
Good. I got you guys convinced. Now we can go on.
See, I remember a saying that goes something like that, "What you're doing is making so much noise, I can't hear what you're saying."
That sounds like a proverb.
It's an epigram, yes. And then I think of that story or that parable in the New Testament where those two sons were asked by the father to go out and work in the vineyard, and the one said, yes, I'll go, but he never went. And the other one said he wasn't going to go, but went. And who was commended in the end? See?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there's another little subset of stuff that I'd like to tuck in here because I think it's important as we go through Proverbs, because in our Bible, in the canon, Proverbs and Ecclesiastes are side by side. They are both known as wisdom literature, but Ecclesiastes, along with Job, is more of the skeptical tradition. It basically, Ecclesiastes says the world's a mess, can't figure it out, so we might as well serve God. Whereas Proverbs has everything tidy. You work hard, you get what you work for. Let me just give you a quick example of those two different perspectives. We have already looked at, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider its ways and be wise." But here's one from Ecclesiastes. "The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the learned. But time and chance happen to them all." So this orderly stuff that you learn from the ant really doesn't work sometimes.
Well, the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike.
That's true.
I mean,
so I guess Ben Franklin would fall in with the Proverbs crowd, not with the Ecclesiastes crowd.
Oh, Ben Franklin had everything figured out. Yeah, yeah,
but I'm saying his sayings that we all know. Yeah. And a lot of people think those are in Proverbs, actually. Like early to bed, early to rise. It's not from Proverbs, I don't think.
Well, some of my students really like Ecclesiastes, and increasingly, I think in our skeptical age, there are some who wrote for that, for whom that really speaks. But in general, I found that Proverbs has very few enemies among my students.
Interesting.
You can take these little epigrams. But they really don't deal with the more tangled things, and we'll be pressing some of those tangled things here,
mm-hmm.
because some of the Proverbs are wonderfully true in partial applications.
Seem wonderfully true, right.
Now, Alden, I have a little tangential question to ask you, because I don't know about the what kind of textual evidence we have for Proverbs, but do we know how it was assembled? It's too far back, you know? Because, I mean, I know a lot of epigrams today that I wonder. I mean, one of my favorite ones is that there are two kinds of people in the world, those who do the work and those who do the credit. Try, if you can, to be in the first crowd. There's a lot less competition. You know? Now, that's too long to go into Proverbs, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I wonder if it isn't sayings that emerge from our human experience that in ancient times were condensed and ended up being recited by the believing community and thus formed a collection of them that then ends up in the canon.
And as some of these variations, well, for instance, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of the
wisdom.
Yeah. Beginning of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
The last half of that is different in each of the other cases.
Yes, it is.
In Proverbs. So, now, mm-hmm. one of the clues, and I think this is important just to get over this hump so that one is not terribly surprised, in Proverbs 25:1, you have an important clue as to what happens. Says, these also are proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah collected.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Now, that's 250 years after Solomon.
Oh.
So, apparently, mm-hmm. there was a new Solomonic club formed on campus, and they went to the South Reading mm-hmm. Room in the library and said, let's mm-hmm. see what we can find here. See?
Mm-hmm.
So, this kind of process, which involves people other than the named author, mm-hmm. is certainly something that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, some scholars think that the first 9 chapters of Proverbs are really kind of introduction to the rest of the book, which is more truly Solomonic simply because it's kind of its mm-hmm. longer pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Then you finally get to the pithy Proverbs, which come from Solomon himself probably. But even then, we have Solomon. Did he write all of Proverbs? No, the book itself tells us
we don't.
He didn't. David, psalmist. But there are many psalms, which David didn't write.
Correct.
Yeah.
Moses, obviously some parts of Moses he couldn't have written. He wasn't
there. That's commentary on his life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The last 8 verses of Deuteronomy describe his death. Now, some of the rabbis got sufficiently exercised about that one of them said, well, he saw his death in vision and with tears streaming down his face. You know, he wrote the record of his death. You see, well, that's pressing a bit much. And you go back to mid-century when the Seventh-day Adventist Bible commentary was written, you'll find the commentary very reluctant to say that other authors contributed to the book of
Proverbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Augur, for example, well, that's probably another name for Solomon, and some other things that we'll look at as we go along. But the church has matured. Now, as we mature and learn to ask those questions, there is always the danger, and this concerns me, that the spiritual power of the book may be diminished.
Diminished, yeah.
Now, if somebody's looking for devotional stuff, I don't know of anybody ever who has memorized for devotional purposes. These also are Proverbs which the men of Solomon copied.
Yeah, I don't know how to resolve that problem for a person, but one of the things I think that has helped me is understanding a little bit more about the ancient world more generally, more broadly. And that is, and I think I alluded to that last week, that this that the veil between the sacred and the secular is not...
Oh, it's a very thin one.
It's a very thin veil. So that as we explore the natural world, we are exploring a world that is created by God, and overtly we understand that everything that God created is good.
Mm-hmm.
God says himself that it is good, and it's sacred. So all of life is interconnected, and all of life is sacred. So I guess personally I don't have that problem, but I do hear that sometimes, and...
Yeah.
Well, I think it just enhances my understanding of how much more magnificent everything is.
But see, in a society where there are high levels of superstition, for example,
sure,
and I'm not in favor of superstition, but
right,
and then you learn that your superstition is not well-founded. That
yes,
when the thunderstorm came through, it was not God who was angry,
right,
and they were not throwing bolts of lightning,
right,
and destroying your crops.
Right.
That actually it was a phenomenon of the weather.
Right. Which is predictable if we understand the atmospheric conditions
Then you see the
right,
mystery, the degree of mystery declines, and God is not as big as he used to be.
Yeah.
That's Alden's point, I think.
I understand. I get that point. But I guess for me, there's a bigger point. And the bigger point is, wow, why is all of this here at all?
Sure.
Yeah.
But if I could draw a couple of practical examples. If you, well, I think C.S. Lewis talks about going to a real orchestra, and he was kind of disappointed first time because it didn't sound like it did on the Victrola.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Then he was used to that undifferentiated sound. Now, all of a sudden, he could hear the piccolo and those other things.
Oh,
and
right.
It wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
So I think expectations, and one gets over that.
Sure.
You can imagine people going and getting irritated when they discover, well, he borrowed that from this musician, that one. No.
Yeah.
You've got to forget all that stuff and listen to the final product.
Yeah.
Now, one other discovery I'd like to tuck in here before the clock is that Augur, the author, the named author of chapter 30, when I was doing my study of the presence of God here, I discovered that there are actually two prayers in Proverbs, and they are both in that chapter. One of a more skeptical nature, but another one a more practical one. Let me just read those here because I think they are really amazing, really beautiful prayers. This is what he says. Two things I ask of you, Lord. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord?
Mm.
Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of God. That's really an amazing prayer.
It is.
We'll later on when we come to Augur, we'll look at the other one. But to contrast that with Ecclesiastes, again, to show you the contrast between the two books, in chapter 5, 1, there's no prayer in Ecclesiastes, no hallelujahs, no praise. Mm-hmm. God shows up many more times in Ecclesiastes than he does in Proverbs, but not with the same sense of urgent presence.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he says, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they are wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth.
Yeah.
So let your words be few.
That's a good proverb. So.
Yeah.
And since time is up, I will let my words be few. And I will thank Linda and Dave for participating with us. I'll thank Dave Olson, our program engineer, and thank all of you for listening in for the Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.